Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-host...
BT Oz.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
You are so badass.
Oh my gosh.
Too many places to take that.
Mackie, you want to take Dan somewhere? What?
No.
Bow, chicka, bow, wow. Oh my gosh, I think I have to leave now.
What? You just got here.
Yeah, and I stayed a little too long, it seems.
Oh, it's far too late for you to have been on here a little too long.
Speaking on being here too long, that's actually a good segue into something. As people know, we started this season with Kay Madeline, goes by Kay Madeline here at Poulton, and Kay Mad Candy over at CFC. She's been unavailable for some time. We still do not know her status. We wish her well and hope that she will return to the Pacific community soon. Annalie has been here since episode 42. We want some stability, which we've been working to find since Wetter went over to help start Modcast, our sibling show on Civ modding. Annalie has been doing an incredible job in helping us out, and you've become one of us regulars. And yes, we define that term loosely, but... Annalie was asked, and she has agreed to become the regular fourth co-host as of this episode going forward.
Yay!
Thanks, guys.
Congratulations.
It's interesting to be here. I mean...
You're a good asset to the podcast, Annalie.
Oh, well, thank you, John.
Now, about paying into the pension plan... What you have to do.
First, get seniority.
And what are my benefits for this?
Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. And here's your host for tonight and today, Daniel Quick.
That is me.
Kamandrua.
Hi.
It's not my thing he has trouble with, yes.
That's why I laughed.
Imran Siddiqui.
Hi.
Makalua.
Woo.
Holy cow.
See?
How did you get yours right?
Probably because I've whined enough about it.
For the first time, Mackie and my name are said right. And
good job, John.
Thank you. I'm BT Oz, and a big g'day to everyone out there listening to this podcast.
Although, in our news here, we're going to talk about Civilization IV Colonization. If you really want the lowdown, listen to the Polycast Focus Civilization IV Colonization with Mike Bates, Ed Piper, and Jesse Smith from Firaxis. From the Modcast panel, Wouter Locutus Snyders and Ken Impaler WRG Ferlin are also with me, and it includes some new information on the game never before released, and also features the worldwide premiere of the game's opening theme music.
Shiny.
News, Civilization IV Colonization Information Download with a Supplemental of Sorts. Mailbag, considerable reach and positive feedback to episode 50 with Sid Meier and John B.T. Oz on being a Polycast listener from its beginning to guesting on it now. Senate, justifying the flanking promotion when, quote-unquote, all hell broke loose and said sushi company can be really dangerous. Then, a top 10 list from a 1,000 clues you play Civ 4 too much thread. Forum talk. Unit per tile limit in Civilization, why can't ships be sunk by fighters and or bombers, and Civ 4 call, choosing which nation you become after independence. Then, candidate for a Civilization theme song.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
New Civilization IV Colonization information and screenshots. At IGN, Worth Playing, and at HookedOnColonization.com, a fellow fan site.
I actually read these before.
No way.
But they have in the IGN preview, well, they say four playable factions, and each have two leaders, and they have each of the leaders for the factions listed.
And since you brought it up, Imran, why don't you go ahead and pronounce those names?
The English leaders are George Washington and John Adams.
Oh, no.
All right, the Dutch leaders are Peter Stuyvesant and Adrian van der Donck. French are Samuel de Champlain and Louis de Frontenac. And the Spanish leaders are Simon Bolivar and José de San Martín.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess also they all talk about the maps. Few map types. There's a New World map that just creates a pole-to-pole landmass. And there's a Caribbean map, which goes for large islands. And I believe there's probably also maps that actually show the actual look of North and South America, which is nice.
Yes, because we know you'll be able to play on historical maps.
Yeah.
So you'll see that there for sure.
Yeah, there's a screenshot on Worth Playing that shows the proper Americas map.
Well, if colonization's on worthplaying.com, that must mean it's worth playing.
What, are you saying it wasn't worth playing before it was on Worth Playing?
Exactly.
All right, Worth Playing, if you use that byline, you can send royalties right to me, since I own this show.
Oh. The Worth Playing screenshots are probably the best. They also have a Continental Congress listed up of a number of different individuals.
Yeah, and it's more of a variety than there were in the original game.
Yeah.
Because there's some of these I don't remember at all from the original colonization.
Other historical peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they have a lot of Civ-like stuff, such as the after-game replay or whatever. A screenshot of that, indicating, you know, how the game went. And there's a lot of people on the foreign advisor screen. One, two, three.
Yeah, if you look, it's all of the Indian leaders as well as the European leaders. It's not a separate thing. It's all one screen.
Yeah. They're like seven Indian leaders and the other three European leaders. It seems to me that there are seven Indian leaders. I don't know if those change in every way, but our friend Montezuma is right there.
Oh, no.
Again?
Oh.
There's an interesting screenshot, basically, which says, you know, you have a scout, I guess, and they're saying, you've discovered what appears to be native burial grounds. Do you wish to search for treasure? And they're like, yes, no, and I'm sure that impacts your dealings with the natives as well. If you decide to search for treasure there, then you can find something, but the natives would be pissed.
Yeah, in the original, sometimes they would get pissed, sometimes they wouldn't. It was just kind of a dice roll whether they did or didn't, so sometimes you might look and sometimes you might not. And sometimes you'd look, and you'd find nothing, and they'd still get pissed. So, it's up to you whether you want to get them angry. Especially if you've been trading them rifles and horses.
And from both Worth Playing and IGN, beyond the screenshots, you can get a trailer. There's a higher quality version on Worth Playing for the average netizen plebeian, because if you want a higher version with IGN, you have to become an insider. Blech.
Damn them. Oh, also, there's an interesting screenshot as well on Worth Playing, where basically, I guess you're doing your constitution, and they say, please choose your stance on slavery, and they have, if you pick all men are free, you get +2 population per settlement, and if you pick slavery, you get +25% of a variety of different resources in all your settlements. That's a good screenshot of making the choice of which you want and the benefits of each.
I like the ocean textures.
They are gorgeous.
And the interface is really nice. Sid Meier's Colonization Preview.
Yeah, it's for the original colonization.
Oh.
The new world lies before you with all its peril, promise, and infinite possibility in Sid Meier's Colonization. Discover and explore new lands. Strategically plant your first colony and begin to build. It's a fresh start for your budding new nation. But beware your enemies. The natives might not be so happy about your exciting plans for their home. And powerful rivals are moving in with plans of their own. It's a game of ruthless strategy, wily diplomacy, and a great and glorious future. Colonization from Microprose. To the victor go the spoils.
Wow.
I love that music.
I hope they keep this music. Yeah.
That's the real music that was in the game originally, in the first version. That of course, it wasn't quite so sound cardy.
So 1994.
It's very.
Those graphics are amazing. What?
Wow, look at the water.
Look at the water.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
That was awesome. Got news? Email news at apolyton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, the cutest, or one of the other news editors.
Greetings from the mailbag, where we address listener questions and comments.
Episode 50 of Polycast. It's been a little popular.
I don't know why.
A little?
That was kind of sucky.
Now, the real question is, did it surpass girls playing Civ yet?
I'm just looking at the stats right here, and this is just from the website directly, because as we've talked about before, we're never going to know exactly how many people have listened to it, how many people have downloaded it, because it's possible, for example, that if one person downloads it, then five people could be listening to that copy. So all these factors, you never know how many listeners we have. But in terms of downloads directly from the website, if I take the people who have downloaded the standard quality, and I add that with those who listen to it streaming, and those who downloaded the dial-up version, that exceeds 1,000. It's actually 1,007.
Ooh.
Wow. It's not bad.
Well, that's pretty good.
As a means of comparison, in the same time period, an average episode of Polycast is somewhere between 150 and 200 from the website. So,
well,
and as far as the girls playing Civ goes, if I'm looking at, by popularity, the 10th most popular download this month right now is the girls playing Civ.
Ooh.
Still?
Still.
Maybe it's because we keep talking about it.
Not only did John want to come onto the show, but he has listened to the show from the beginning, which actually makes those two things sound even stranger.
Wow.
Listeners, here's what John had to say back on the 20th of May when he called into the show.
Hello, Dan. I'd like to give you a big greetings from Australia. And I'd like to come on the show one day and have a very good long chat to you and Macaluna and all the rest of the Polycast members and have a good old chat about where it's heading and what's happening in the future with Civ. Alrighty. Thanks, mate. See ya.
So, John, why did you want to come onto the show?
Why? Well, I'm a long-time listener, and I felt that, you know, I could just contribute something for a few minutes or have 5 minutes of fame. And, yeah, why not?
You do realize it's 5 minutes of infamy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Just thought we'd better clarify that. So now you have listened to the show from the beginning, from episode 1, which we released back in October of 2006. How did you find the show?
It was longer.
That took me a few moments. How did you discover the show?
I've always been on a Politan site, and the same with Civ Fanatics, and I discovered one day you had a new section called Polycast.
Okay. Did you do any reading on the background of the show? Like, did you read our About section or anything like that? Or did you just go to the page and you just started listening? You didn't know what to expect.
That's right. Yeah.
So, after listening to the first episode, how long did it take you to listen to the second episode? Did you listen to the second episode almost as soon as it came out? Or did you have to go away from it and decide, I don't know if I want to go through this again?
No, I waited for the second one and downloaded that one.
We like that we have the blooper reels at the end of episodes now as opposed to separate ones.
Yeah, they're actually quite funny.
Did you think that we'd get to 50-plus episodes?
There's a lot of information everyone gives out online, and of course there's a lot of newbies coming into the Civ community, and a lot of them be very much interested in what we have to say.
I'm glad that you didn't say, no, I'm not surprised, because you guys have no lives.
Was it the information then that we delivered was kept you coming back episode after episode to listen in?
Absolutely, yeah. And then it was different when it was split off into Modcast.
Yeah, so when we announced in January we were splitting it off and Wouter was leaving the Polycast panel to do Modcast, what was your initial reaction to learning that?
A little bit disappointed, but I still downloaded that lot of Motley Crue and to have a listen of them, hear what they had to say.
Do you listen to the Polycast specials?
Yes, I do, actually.
Oh, okay.
I listen to everything.
Oh, wait. Okay. You've listened to everything, so now I definitely have to ask. I don't think I've asked this from a Polycast guest co-host or ever in a long time. Does that mean you listen to Cut, too?
Which is Cut? Where's that?
Okay, that's okay. Cut was the side series from the first season. Clips that didn't make it into the final episode.
Oh, I might have listened to one or two, yeah.
Did you ever think that you would be on the show?
No. It was just a one-off thing. It was just a random thought one day. Gee, I'd like to be on the show.
And are you disappointed now?
No, it's great. I'm just wondering, where do I sign up for the top job?
It's like, I want a dance job.
You want to take on the editing too? Okay, well then.
Colin, today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-212-887-659. That's 441-212-88-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log into the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy. Bostock wants to justify the flanking promotion. He wants to say, all right, why should I do it? If he posts down, the me and team says they have a couple uses, such as basically building on the fact that it gives a withdrawal chance if the unit would lose otherwise.
For those not certain or forgetting, flanking one, it's available to mounted armor, helicopter, and naval units, giving you a plus 10% withdrawal chance. To me, flanking one is not something I'm going for specifically. It's a means to an end. As Uncle JJ says, flanking two is much more useful, giving plus 20% chance of withdrawal and immunity for first strikes. So I'm going for flanking one so I can get to flanking two. Flanking one also opens up sentry and navigation. Well, navigation is only good for naval units. Plus one movement range for navigation one and the navigation two. Sentry plus one visibility range, which you could also get from flanking. That's not really of interest to me so much. It could have its use, but eh.
Yeah, it's like the game that the me and team is describing where it's early on and he's using horse archers and he's going up against the other type of defensive archers and having immunity to first strikes really takes the damage down a lot, and then having withdrawal gives him a chance to save those troops for another battle. So it's not totally straining his economy to be fighting these people. It's that immunity part is the really nice thing about the flanking more than the withdrawal almost.
Yeah, and allowing you to take out or at least do some considerable damage to enemy siege units without killing off the stack defenders first. So long as your unit lives, that's all it has to do. That's the great thing about withdrawal. It doesn't have to win, it just has to live.
All hell broke loose! Deep Blue says he's playing with Hammurabi. It was in the game with Emperor setting... What's that? Pangaea. Huge map and 14 opponents. Shaka declared war on him, and he has 5 vessels, so he suddenly became at war at 6 countries. He's trying to deal with the situation.
I think he meant vassals.
Yeah, 5 vessels.
Oh, yes, that's true. And the next turn, Kublai Khan declared war, and he has 2 vassals with him, but he said vessels again. And, oh, Hannibal declared war the turn before that. So in 3 turns, he found himself at war with 10 countries at once.
That totally sucks.
Woo! I've had that happen, but that was because I was stupid and raised a holy city.
Duh.
Oops.
Yeah, I've had that happen before, too, and I just play it noble. where I'm pretty powerful on my own, not as powerful as the, say, the first and the second, who also have a number of vassals at their disposal. If it was just even that one or that first or that second largest military-speaking nations, I could probably hold them off. But by this point, it's mid to late game. They've got a number of vassals under their thumb, and they've just gotten either tired of my going after their friends, who weren't quite as powerful, or I'm just simply next on the tasty list, because they've, they've already either vassalized or destroyed anyone else who was not as powerful as I was militaristically, and then I realize, oh, geez, I'm the only one left on the planet who does not have any vassals or who has not been vassalized. Oh, World builder.
Dan's country. It's what's for war.
Help me, help me. He said in a follow-up post that he recently made peace with Khan, the one who had the 20 artillery stack, and so three are now down off of his shoulder, so just got seven left. But he says that Chaka is not being particularly good, where he's killing their units at 10-to-1 ratio. And that he's got several great generals that have emerged, so most of his units now have 4-plus promotions and some have 6. So he seems to be holding his own. Oh, and the irony was that Chaka won the game by a diplomatic victory.
Oh, that's perfect.
The lesson that was learned from this game is that never let an aggressive opponent grow too large before you react. Despite the defeat, it was a very enjoyable and dramatic game, and I learned a lot from it.
Well, I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did. I mean, that's impressive, really. He forced Chaka to accept peace, and then he went and kicked Caesar's butt, and then all... I mean, that's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that's usually good, because usually by that point, anyone that you're not at war with, there's no way they're going to get involved, even if they really, really like you. Even if you have something to trade, or a fair bit of gold, you go to them certainly, I don't know, noble level and above, probably easier on the earlier difficulty levels, perhaps, but and they're like, won't you come to war with us and help us? And they're like...
Against, like, 10 countries?
Are you nuts? I should go to war against you just for insulting me that you would ask that question.
I declare war against you. Oh. Can Sid's sushi really be dangerous? I guess if the fish is not fresh. But Shady, I think, has other concerns. Yeah, he's pretty shady. I'm sure he would not use fresh fish. But he's thinking anyone have the problems of mass starvation caused by civs who were trading you a lot of fish suddenly declaring war on you. So basically, does he think it's stupid that your economy can basically implode from corporations? Well, the real world answer after that is, have you been following the world economy? But he's saying he has Sid Sushi's Co. in every city, and he's seriously broke, and he wants to know if this is going to be dangerous.
It's great if you know you're going to be going through an end game that's in a more peacetime environment, but if you're going to go through one that's going to have a lot of wars and you're going to lose all those trade routes, you cannot let yourself get reliant on the food it's supplying, or you're going to be in the situation that he's in right now. As much as I love it.
I understand why people are gaga over Sid Sushi, but my still preferred corporation is Civilized Jewelers. And if you're able to get that, and I can understand that could be a big if, assuming that you get a great artist, first of all, and that you get it so that you're actually able to build it for someone else is able to build it before you. But if you can do that, that can help you make some serious money.
He could build plenty of banks. It'll bring in extra gold for him.
Yeah, and make sure that you've built your Wall Street National Wonder, and that you've built it in the city of yours that is generating the most gold. It's always disappointing when you forget to check that.
Personal experience, Dan?
No.
Uh-huh.
This person says that he had environmentalism thrust upon him by the United Nations. He says, which I built, unfortunately I am also the hated, the world considers you a villain. If you recognize that, oh my gosh, environmentalism being forced on me is going to really screw me over. And he's posting in the Beyond the Sword thread here, so why didn't you just tell the UN, no, I'm going to defy that resolution?
Maybe he'd said that before, and that's why the world considers him a villain.
That's true, then. I thought that. And he says, he's considered the world a villain, but he says, it's not helping by having environmentalism thrust upon me, which sounds like he didn't say, no, I'm not going to take it, and the world considers a villain for some other reason. Because if he had said no, then the resolution would have failed, and then he wouldn't be having this problem right now. He's missing some details. 1,000 clues. You play Civilization 4 too much.
We need clues for that?
Top 10 list.
Woo!
Here we go with Dan and the lists yet again.
All right, let's hear it.
At number 10.
You have your traits written on your business card by Winth.
By Winth?
Winth. W-I-N-T-H is his or her username.
At number 9.
You wonder why not every country has its Globe Theater, Mount Rushmore, Oxford University, and Wall Street. From Misty Fly.
Number 8.
Your doctor tells you that you need to start living a healthier lifestyle, so you build an aqueduct in your backyard. By Dewey.
Oh.
It's sort of funny, sorry.
Is it going to build a granary, too?
That'll be next, if it's not enough.
At number 7.
You tear apart your neighbor's vegetable garden, hoping to get some gold for pillaging it. From Black Rabbit.
6.
You log into your E-Trade account and try to find a listing for Sid Sushi. From Messix.
5.
You drive around strange neighborhoods looking for goody huts. From Joe Soakwork.
That's sort of funny.
That could get you in trouble with the police.
What are you doing? I'm looking for goodies.
What number are we on?
4.
You go to the store without any money and instead offer the cashier your knowledge of the alphabet. That's from Dewey.
3.
You wonder why it takes so long to discover city ruins. They're easily viewable on the world map. From Commodore Nate.
Brown.
Number 2.
You put Diplo music on your iPod. From Lemon Merchant.
These are getting worse.
Number 1.
If you see a tank, you pull out your spear and charge. Random person.
Spearman versus tank. Oh, dear.
Honorable mention. K-Bert says, when you walk on a road, you think, great, I can walk 3 times as fast.
Okay, that's only half funny.
Best exchange was with someone who didn't think much of this list. He's like, number 286, you make crappy lists about Civilization 4. Number 287, you read crappy lists about Civilization 4. So later on, Sir Lamphead responded, what crawled up your ass and ended its turn?
Ended its turn. Okay, that part's funny.
That's funny in the whole...
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot civ issues in the forums.
Unimatrix 11 wants to ask if we would like to see a unit per tile limit, and has a poll as well on it. Basically, he believes that perhaps there might be way too many units in a tile based on historical numbers of people in one little area. In the poll that he did, almost half, 7 of the 15 voters said, no, I pondered this and have come to the conclusion that it would suck. And 4, 26% said, I never thought about this, but yeah, it might be a good idea. So yes, you too can influence this vote. Theban has a good point where he says, even though there's a realism element here of limiting how many units per tile, he says it can only hurt the AI, which already sucks at warfare.
Not to mention, at the size that armies get, especially in the endgame, do you really want to have to move 9 separate stacks instead of just 1?
Wait, you get to play at the endgame?
Yeah.
Now, although it was not Seidel's suggestion, but he mentioned it in this thread and referenced another thread where he saw this, where someone had suggested that you can have unlimited units per tile like you do now, but the difference is that the heal rate would decrease the more units you had, and eventually your units would take damage rather than healing. It was flavored as disease, where terrain, promotions, techs all play into this, with jungle increasing the disease rate, medic promotions decreasing it, and medicine and such raising the disease threshold. I like that idea. You don't have it so that it's unlimited. You don't have a hard limit. It says that it's a soft limit. It's like, well, you can have unlimited, but you have to take into account X, Y, Z. So then you have to decide, okay, well, I'm going to attack this enemy, or I'm in defensive, but jeepers, I'm in jungle. Boy, oh boy, I better bring some units along that have some medic promotions, for instance, because that's going to be a factor.
Okay.
Just so long as it's not too complex. You don't have to require a calculator or have to take notes to be able to keep track of things.
I don't really have an opinion on this. I wouldn't run into any stack limit.
Because he never plays.
Second topic, and this is, I actually like this one. Question is, Hottest Hunter says, why can't ships be sunk by fighters or bombers? Is it just a balance issue? If so, he's calling BS on that. He's calling BS, that's right. Notice. I can see maybe not allowing fighters to do so, but bombers should be able to.
Well, I absolutely agree on that, because I think if a bomber's coming past, at least he should have a chance to bomb any ships out there.
That's one way to counter, like, a big navy appearing off your coast without being like, oh, crap. Gotta build a lot of ships. I mean, if you've not been doing necessarily all that much of ship building, at least you have their bombers to kind of do a little bit of naval help for you.
That's right.
And if that stack includes a land-based invasion force, all the more important. As you said, if you don't have a navy, much easier to get rid of them at sea if you can manage it.
Indeed. And perhaps that is a balance issue that they've done so that you aren't able to basically ignore the Navy by just building a massive bomber fleet. Perhaps that's what they figured, like, oh, you got to build some ships. Even if you don't want to go anywhere and invade anyone across the sea, if you want to make other seaborne invasions go away, you're going to have to build a Navy, perhaps.
And, you know, if you did make it so that bombers could ultimately sink ships, but not fighters, perhaps, you are going to have a limit on the number of bombers you can have, assuming you have, I think it was what introduced in the 3.13 patch, where you have the air unit limit, 8, and that's assuming that you've built an airport, whereas you can say, oh, well, but if I want, I can just park a whole bunch of carriers around. Aha, but your carriers can only have fighters on them.
Yeah.
And even then, that's only 3 per carrier, so unless you have a lot of cities. And then again, you also have to have a lot of coastal cities, because although you can relocate your air units across any distance on the map to actually be able to use it in a combat situation or for recon, there, of course, is the limit in terms of their range.
Mm.
You know, if I see my target or enemy has frigates, ships of the line, even ironclads, in other words, they are really behind the technology curve, I'll consider taking to the skies with my fighters and bombers, and hopefully jet fighters and stealth bombers if I've got them. Particularly, as I said, if they're accompanied by an invasion force, as has been discussed with Civ 4 colonization, if you can sink those ships, as much of the invasion force as possible before it ever actually lands, the better off you're apt to be. But if there are no land units in that stack that's coming at you, I would only use my fighters and bombers if I didn't have a sufficient naval force to counter them. And part of that's because, at least at noble level, and I'm sure even higher, and post Beyond the Sword in single player with the AI, I'm finding that when they're bringing over their naval invasion force, they've got fighters of their own on carriers of their own, and they will just rip to shreds my fighters and bombers. I rather find that my fighters and bombers are very effective for damaging land-based units. Of course, if I'm using those to attack naval-based units, especially with my fighters, I'm going to be losing air protection. Now, maybe I have some other cities that are not along the coast, so I wouldn't be using my fighters and bombers for them, but I could take them out of those cities and then move them into the cities that have the coastal cities, closer to coastal cities, that have lost their fighters and their bombers. Really, I think your best counter to naval units are other naval units. And as you were saying, Imran, for balancing, if fighters and bombers were able to destroy ships, then you would just be building up and up and up. But I think for the realism fact, and as I said before, I think bombers should be able to do that because you're already going to be limited to how many bombers that you can have.
Mm. But if you don't want to do any of that, just remember the phrase, loose lips sink ships. So just start talking a lot.
Put on an episode of Polycast. Oh my gosh, we're not going here. We're gone.
Yo, that's a good idea. Put on Polycast in the background while you're playing, and then you hear like someone that actually knows what they're talking about some strategy. Then while you're playing, you can be like, let me try that.
I've actually done that. Yes.
That's awesome.
I hope it worked, whatever it was.
It was about 3 a.m., and it was one more turn.
All right, this is a question about Civ 4 colonization. Culpo asks, in colonization, choosing which nation you become after independence. Colonization, you got the USA flag after you declared independence with any nation. And he's thinking, this one, the English could choose between the USA and the Canadian flag. Spain could have many nations to choose from. Mexico, Bolivia, Argentina. French could choose between Quebec and Haiti. Dutch can take the flag of Suriname or Netherlands, Antilles. Basically, I guess he wants to be able for you to have, you know, not just be the U.S. Like, say you're in South America, instead of having the U.S. flag, you can pick another country or something like that.
So I take it in the original colonization, was it just always U.S.? You automatically became American?
It gave you a text type of thing on your, I think it was in the Hall of Fame screen or something, that would refer to it as things like that, like the United States for that, or it could be the Republic of something. I think it just picked randomly from a list, but the little bit of animation in there just used an American flag. It didn't use different flags.
As General N20 pointed out, this wouldn't really affect gameplay, but it would be neat if you could pick your flag you want after colonization, or even just pick the name of it. Now, as T-Boy says, as with most things, if Firaxis didn't put this in, a modder likely will. True. But
you want it from the beginning.
But I was about to say, if we go with that, then why would we have a show? Modders do it. Show's over.
Listen to Modcast.
Yes, they're a motley crew.
Oh.
Personally, I think that although it doesn't affect gameplay, it would be really neat. And why not just have it so you could have a text editor so you could type in whatever the name of your nation is. I'd be done with it.
Yeah. Well, and the flag, and pick the flag, too. I think it's like a fluff thing, but as I think we've discussed in prior podcasts, fluff things are fun. They add enjoyment to the game. It's not just about gameplay all the time.
Yeah, the fluff things are the things I like.
I'd like to be able to pick my own flag if I'm winning of different countries.
And it'd be great if you'd have the ability, for example, not just from a preset list of flags, but you could, like, oh, insert custom flag, and then you could get one that has, like, the middle finger on it, so when you win, you could be like, ha!
Oh my gosh.
If flags are available, I'm sure custom flags will be coming like that shortly.
What's the name of your country, Dan?
Up yours! I think the quote of the thread goes to Trooper 5445, who, in talking about giving the player the ability to enter a custom name, quote, sure, you're going to get a lot of genital references, but no one has to see them, unquote.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, that's how you did the name, because when you would first sail in from the map, when you first saw land, it would ask you what you wanted to name that continent, and then the Republic of whatever or what have you was based off of that, plus whatever you had named the continent.
Mm.
So if they call it something Italia, you know, it's going to be the Free Republic of...
What Boxer Jen suggested could be the Civilization theme song?
I used to rule the dice.
Because of the part about rolling the dice and I used to rule the world, I think that's probably where he thought of that, which is weird because I thought the same thing when I heard the song the first time.
I always picture a Civ game when I hear this song.
Speaking of, you play Civ 4 too much.
Okay. But I had a conversation with my husband and I said, listen to this song. Listen to the chorus here. Does it not sound like Roman cavalry choirs? He goes, no, it's Roman Catholic choirs. Come on. Why would they be talking about cavalry choirs? And I'm like, no, it really sounds like Roman cavalry.
Sounds like
Isn't
cavalry.
Cool? No, it's Catholic. You're a retard. What? And so, I mean, he just is like, you obviously have an issue. You should deal with it, kind of a thing.
Your husband called you a retard?
No. He's a lot nicer than that. But the look he
All right, I'm just wondering. I'm like, what?
If you know my husband, he would never say anything like that. But but he still gave me that look like, are you really, you know, sure you know what you're talking about here?
Yeah, and it is Roman cavalry choirs are singing.
Yeah, I got really excited when I saw this, because I'd never actually looked up the text before.
So we can definitely see the relevance. The song's Spanish title, Aviva la Vida, apparently is taken from a painting by a 20th century Mexican artist, Frida Kahlo, and it translates into the English phrase, long live life. The bass guitarist for Coldplay, Guy Berryman, said that it's a story about a king who's lost his kingdom, and all the album's artwork is based on the idea of revolutionaries and guerrillas.
Gorillas? What about orangutans?
Great. But,
I personally love this song, but I'm a big Coldplay fan too.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was this song that actually got my mom to buy an iPod.
Really?
Yes.
Apparently, I didn't realize this, but we must have entered 2009 because Civ Rev has been declared the strategy game of the year by G4 TV.
Woohoo! We don't need to see any other games.
Civilization Revolution marks the Civ series' first original console title. World Domination comes to the couch with robust online features and fast gameplay.
Now, admittedly, it wasn't G4 TV itself choosing it, but it was based on visitor input. CivRev took 37% of the vote in strategy, beating out Final Fantasy Tactics, The War of the Lions, Jeanne d'Arc, Sands of a Solar Empire, and World in Conflict. But Game of the Year went to Halo 3. Surprise.
Woo.
With the Civ leader with the most hilarious angry face, the game I'm playing right now, I cannot think of the leader's name, which is really sad. Maybe someone can remember if I describe the animation. It's when he's annoyed with you, he draws you closer to him, like the camera actually moves in closer on his face.
I remember that action. I don't remember who does it. It's not Ragnar, is it? No. I think if you're talking about angry faces, I think Pakal takes the cake. Because he absolutely throws a fit. But if you're talking about animation, nobody beats Catherine slapping, really. That's top.
Though I do have to say, Zara Jakob picture, it looks like he's wearing a tracksuit.
I agree, but I have always thought that.
And there's always the classic Isabella with her look of, how dare you?
Yeah. Later in this thread, they say that it's Gilgamesh that pulls you into the camera. Thank you for listening to Polycast Episode 51, an official podcast of a Polytown Civilization site. You've been listening to Dan Q.
Yes, you have.
Imran Siddiqui.
Bye.
Makalua.
Bye.
I'm Carter Mandua. And John. BT Oz.
Bye all.
You're not the first who asked to come on the show and ended up being on the show, but you are the first person who asked to come on the show and left a voicemail to that effect.
Wow.
You would do this again?
Absolutely. And I'd just like to say a very quick hello to Midgard and Kali Dragon there in New York City.
Do they listen to the show though, John?
They will be after this one.
Oh, oh, converts. All right.
From the Modcast panel, pow, pow.
Pow. Pow, pow, pow.
Whoa.
He's far more professional than we are.
I don't know if that's saying much, but you're right.
Oh, oh.
By the way, are you guys hearing feedback on my mic?
A little bit. I'm hearing feedback. I don't know if it's you. I think so.
It's when I talk, I'm getting something weird, and I can't figure out what's wrong.
Don't talk. What?
I just knew that was happening.
Why can't ships be sunk by freighters or bombers? Is it just a balance issue?
Did you say freighters or fighters?
Oh, fighters, I'm sorry. It says fighters.
It's gonna go, wait, when did we get freighters?
We have a lot of games to play. I don't know if we have time for polycasts anymore.
I'm sorry, I can't polycast this weekend. I have to conquer Fallout 3.
We have to wait for the final version?
She sounds so... What? Don't you know who I am?
Gosh, I thought being an official member of Polycast meant something.
Oh, girl. Oh, man. You have a lot to learn.
Record date?
August 16th, 2008.
Sound clips copyright of Civ 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword expansion packs.
Sid Meier's Colonization Preview by Livia Dervisilla. Viva La Vida clip by Coldplay copyright Parlophone. G-Phobia 2008 clip copyright G4 Media.
Copyright 2008, Poulton Civilization site at apoulton.net.